From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today is the 40th anniversary of Farm Aid, the first installment of which took place on September 22nd, 1985, at Memorial Stadium in Champaign. Later in the show, we'll have memories of that first concert and talk about a new exhibit of artifacts from the original Farm Aid. That show was prompted by a crisis in American farming in the 1980s. And it's still going on. This year's version of Farm Aid happened Saturday in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And there are some who say our agricultural economy today could be heading for similar trouble as farmers faced back then. Joining me now to talk more about what's happening in farming from a government policy perspective is Jonathan Kappas, an agricultural law and policy expert at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Jonathan, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Well, good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me back on.
Listeners, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. We'll be on this topic for about the next 15 minutes or so. If you are a farmer, if you know a farmer, if you're in a field that depends on agriculture, let us know what you are seeing out there. 800-222-9455. All right, Jonathan, what are we expecting the harvest to look like this year, and what are some of the consequences of that?
Yeah, and I'll lead off with a plug. I went to the exhibit yesterday and got a good heard a good talk from Professor Gilbert, who helped curate it. So it is an incredible thing to see, and it's a great sort of historical marker from here in Champaign, even though obviously the situation that it was built around was not a great situation.
Yeah, and we'll hear from him later in the show today, so stay
tuned.
Great. Yeah.
So your question on the harvest, yeah, we're approaching it or in it at the moment. And by all accounts, and again, this is sort of the projections coming out of USDA, is we're looking at a pretty solid harvest, possibly a bumper crop for corn. And so we're going to have quite a bit to work through. And I think the real concern is not how big the crop's going to be, but are there markets for some of these crops, in particular, and most concerningly, for soybeans?
Yeah. So, I mean, normally I think, you know, the layperson, the non-farmer might think, oh, bumper crop, that's a good thing, right? But not if you don't have anywhere to sell it. So you mentioned the market for soybeans. What's happening there?
Well, the soybean market has, over the last 15, 20 years or so, has really grown with China as a huge purchaser of soybeans. At the same time, Brazil has become a really large competitor on the world stage in producing soybeans. And so what we are seeing in the wake of President Trump's tariffs and trade conflicts has really been China pulling back, if not completely halting any purchases of American soybeans. And so that obviously raises an enormous amount of red flags about what kind of market situation these beans that we're harvesting now will face.
Maybe you can just help us remember, why is China suddenly not buying American soybeans?
Well, again, the tariff conflict. So the administration has initiated a variety of different levels of tariffs on China, and I can't keep track of exactly where they're at the moment. And China, of course, has responded by raising tariffs on American products, and in particular appears to have stopped buying soybeans from the U.S. Now, granted, some of that could be just the timing because we haven't harvested new crop of soybeans, so we'll see what this fall looks like. But it does raise a lot of concerns, and they've really been replacing what U.S. soybean, what they would have bought from the U.S., replacing those with soybeans from Brazil.
And how does this problem with soybeans also potentially affect what's happening with corn then, right? I was reading something about, you know, storage capacity and, you know, farmers often store corn and, you know, if they're storing soy this year, there may be competition. Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, I think one of the things we often forget is how much any one of these things can ripple through, right? Nothing is sort of contained within itself in agriculture in particular. And so you're right, storage is one of them. The impacts on just managing, you know, where to put the beans, whether at the elevator, individual storage on the farm, and how long and how just sort of how to manage that situation. But it also impacts, you know, your farm income, because many farmers, particularly here in Illinois, we rotate corn and soybeans roughly in a 50-50 basis. So half your acres are in corn, half in soybeans. And if there's not a market for an entire half of that crop that you're producing, it's going to have a real impact on your bottom line, on your farm financial management.
So I think that the trade question, is there anything that can be done about that other than, you know, that the president of the United States loves tariffs and needs to be figured out from sort of, you know, from the White House, right? From that perspective. Are there other pieces to that, or is it really as simple as that?
Well, I don't know if anything's as simple as that, but it's certainly, you know, I don't know what it's going to take to get the Chinese market back in place. I also, you know, it's a question of what other markets might be there. Where else could we ship soybeans? Who else is purchasing? And what's the impact on the price to the U.S. farmer? So, again, none of these things, you know, are sort of isolated. They all kind of ripple through a variety of issues that farmers are facing. And you know, one of the tough realities is they planted this crop back in the spring, you know, not expecting this degree probably of fallout in the export markets. And so it's a big risk that they take on when they sink the costs and the seed in the ground in the spring.
So you mentioned about ripple effects through the economy and, you know, soy markets not being what they were overseas creates problems with storage. That could create problem for corn farmers. We had a corn farmer on the show last week, and I've seen messaging from the Corn Growers Association here in Illinois that, you know, more foreign trade would be a big one. Another one would be ethanol production. What about that? What's holding back increased ethanol production?
Well, ethanol production, obviously for corn, not soybeans necessarily, since they, you know, we might look at some diesel options, soy diesel, biodiesel kind of options for soybeans. You know, the ethanol market really is currently mandated as a blend with gasoline. So a lot of the challenges for ethanol is at what level can those biofuels be blended into existing fuels, E10, E15, right? 10% ethanol or 15% ethanol are a lot of the questions. But you also have a lot of pressure on the vehicle market itself. So there's electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles and increased mileage and costs of fuel. And so the challenges kind of, again, sort of all wrap into it and really just complicate the situation before us right now.
So one of the let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Jonathan Kopess, who is an associate professor in agricultural and consumer economics at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program. He closely follows farm and agriculture policy in America. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Some of the other challenges I've heard about, and you know, this may be more or less true in Illinois given the nature of our crops, but the immigration crackdown, I've seen reports nationally of farmers quite concerned about the consequences they're seeing from the immigration crackdown. Is that something you've been following?
Not as closely. I mean, I think there are concerns, again, anything. So, for example, there's a lot of immigrant labor in the meat packing industry. And of course, we feed a lot of corn and soybeans to livestock and animals that then are put through processing and end up on the grocery store shelves or at the countertop at a restaurant. And so it is the potential to disrupt one part of that supply chain could disrupt a lot more further down and eventually impact. But you're correct. We don't typically worry about immigration issues too much in standard corn and soybean farming. A lot of it, you know, you're automated through, you know, combines and tractors and so forth. And so it isn't usually a front of mind issue.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned meatpacking. Beardstown, Illinois, right, is a place that's kind of known for meatpacking. It's in Cass County. And immigrants, there's been a huge immigrant influx in that community over the past few decades. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk with a reporter who's been looking into what changes in immigration policy means for the people who work there. What about the economy more broadly and how that relates to agriculture, right? We still have high interest rates despite that cut last week, and we've seen tremendous inflation over the past 5 years. How's that affecting farming?
Yeah, well, inflation is a big part of it. And so you're going to see inflated costs around fertilizer and input costs like seeds and pesticides, diesel, energy costs and so forth. A lot of concern also about how these costs around land. So what farmers pay to rent acres or try to purchase acres, those have also been high. And one of the things, you know, from a policy perspective that we have a lot of concern about is how much we've also seen an enormous amount of payments going out to farmers in recent years. How much are those keeping those costs up and preventing the kind of adjustments we need, particularly as we look down the road with challenges on export markets and and other sides of the market situation for farmers. It's sort of like, are the policies adjusting to help farmers manage through this, or is it just a kind of continuing set of payments that keep costs up and actually make it more difficult for farmers to adjust and to adapt to what's going on?
Yeah, I listened to it's interesting you say that, because I listened to a CBS News report from 1985 on the original Farm Aid and preparing for today's show. And one of the things the reporter, I think it might have even been Dan Rather, quoting President Reagan saying is that he didn't want a Band-Aid fix for farm policy, just, you know, in basically not more money, right? He wanted long-term solutions. It's interesting that you say that, you know, maybe you said adjustments. That's sort of a euphemism. Does that mean like people need to get out of farming and go into other fields, or what does that mean? Adjustments?
No, in fact, I think that's one of the most unfortunate phrases in agricultural policy and discussions is this idea that you get big or get out of farming, because, you know, farmers don't often just get out. They're usually forced out, and it's usually a very painful and difficult undertaking, bankruptcy and lost acres and lost family farms. And so it is really, really unfortunate. But it is true that you cannot make up for some of these issues with just more payments. And the 1985 Farm Bill, which resulted in that time frame, was one of the most expensive we've ever seen, maybe until the one most recently passed. And I think what I mean by adjustment or adaptation is really working around, you know, the current production system and looking for ways in which policy can help producers. How do you, rather just throw payments at it, what are the things we can look at from history? What are some of the examples, some of the lessons we've learned with things like the 85 situation? You know, the Reagan administration prior to 85 paid farmers to pull out almost 80 million acres from production in 1983 because we were oversupplied and they were hurting. And so there's a lot of these sort of things that we can look back to and try to adjust our policies to help farmers adjust to what's going on. And again, I think the biggest adjustments needed, and from what I hear from my colleagues, are around costs, cash rents, land values, input costs like seeds and fertilizers. Those things don't necessarily adjust when the farmer is sort of stuck in the position of being a pass-through. They pass through payments onto the input companies. And so I think that adjustment probably first has to start on the cost side of it. And that's again, what raises concerns about where policy is headed at the moment.
You mentioned the Farm Bill. I think the first time you and I talked about that was, what, two years ago at least, maybe even three at this point? It's overdue. What are the prospects for some sort of, you know, actually negotiated, policy-minded Farm Bill?
Well, they're not. What Congress did in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act was really pass a reconciliation Farm Bill. So they've increased farm subsidies, they increased some provisions in crop insurance, and they cut the food assistance programs and pushed all that through that large reconciliation bill. And so the idea of a farm bill, at least as we've known it for the last 50 years, is pretty much over at the moment. And I don't know that we see that kind of broad-based coalitional effort again. There's still some.
And just to be clear, the reconciliation is just for 1 year. It's not like this 5 year.
No.
I'm mistaken about. Please,
yeah.
Correct me.
At least with the Farm Bill, they reauthorized everything through 2031 in
terms of
the farm programs and conservation and SNAP and those sort of things. So they've actually they kind of tucked in a Farm Bill more or less into that bill.
Fascinating. So what are the consequences of that? I mean, you were saying it's over, at least in the way that it had been negotiated for what, a generation, I would say.
Yeah, well, really since the early 70s. I mean, the only answer we have at this point is we don't know. We don't know what the consequences will be for the long term. You know, 6 years in politics is a really long time. It's, what, three Congresses ahead. So it's hard to tell how much damage has been done to that coalition. But it's hard to see that this won't have impacts on how any future Congress tries to work on these policies and programs. And in the meantime, these have really increased and unbalanced a lot of the aspects of farm subsidies and crop insurance that could also have real implications and problems for farmers as they work through this current set of challenges like the Chinese soybean market.
You know, I don't know how much you want to get into the sort of the politics of this, but, you know, there are commentators out there who have pointed out that, you know, rural America overwhelmingly supports President Trump. And, you know, I'll quote David Frum at The Atlantic back in April wrote, you know, tariffs are the dish that rural America ordered for everyone. Now the dish has arrived at the table. For some reason, they don't want to partake themselves or pay their share of the bill. What do you say to people who say, you know, or I wonder if you hear farmers sort of reckoning with that, right? That the person they support is in, at least in some ways, responsible for some of the troubles they're facing.
Well, I mean, it's a tough conversation that it may take us more than a few minutes to unpack. But I do think it's a person's vote, right, is based on a host of issues and things. And so it's hard to peg it to one. And it's also, you know, it's the reality of these policies sometimes are not as apparent during campaign discussions as they are when they begin to hit home like they are now. And so, you know, I have a hard time going easily to that sort of conclusion. But, you know, it's where we're at now. And I think this is where policymakers kind of are given this challenge of how do you respond? How do you adapt policies to this? I mean, a lot of what we've heard, like you said, you and I have talked about farm bills for multiple years now, and we've kind of heard the same song over and over, which is more payments, more payments, more payments, higher payment thresholds.
Yeah.
And that's a concern when we're in this kind of situation, particularly if it keeps farmers producing over a cliff when the markets aren't there.
Jonathan Kappes with the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign directs the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
More to come after a break. This is The 21st Show. We'll be right back.